Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
It's obviously a good opportunity to do a third one, yeah, and a last one. I don't want to spend all my life doing movies. I love them, but I think it's good to put an end to it. But let's see.
Director Pablo Larraín has created a niche for himself with his depiction of powerful women in history, beginning with Jackie Kennedy, played by Oscar nominee Natalie Portman in Jackie, and now Princess Diana through the lens of Kristen Stewart in his newest film, Spencer. I'm Michael Schneider, and on this edition of the Variety Awards Circuit podcast, Larraín tells us that his next entry of this type of reimagined biopic would be his last of this particular string of filmmaking, culminating in a trilogy. But first, our Award Circuit Roundtable dissects the recent Critics' Choice and Golden Globe nominations and any surprises or snubs we found. It's all on this edition of the Variety Award Circuit podcast. Stay close. Why, hello, everyone, and happy holidays, I guess. By the time you're listening to this, like, we're a week away from Christmas, and then 2022 is right behind us, and it's crazy, and now I'm panicking. So, sorry about that. I'm Michael Schneider from Variety, joined, as always, by, first off, the most tested duo in all of entertainment journalism. They are definitely physically in perfect shape. Janelle Riley.
Oh, so far from the truth, but I do not have COVID. That's what I can tell you. Okay. Right now, as of 2 hours ago.
Exactly. And you'll be tested again in another 2 hours, right? Jez Take, who's had about 5 tests over the weekend.
Exactly. Knockwood, you know, gonna take a test right after this, so we'll find out.
Vaxxed, double vaxxed, triple vaxxed, quadruple vaxxed. We are all in good shape.
Oh, my gosh.
And joining us this week for the last time. It is our tribute to Danielle Terciano.
Can we just say that I'm not dying? I mean, that made it a little bit maudlin, I think. I'm fine, guys. I don't have COVID either.
Well, Danielle, welcome. Thank you for jumping in. Best thoughts to our buddy Clayton Davis, whose father passed away last week. We're thinking of you. We love you, and hope all the best for you and your family as well. And hope to hear you and see you again soon. So, let's kick things off by, I guess it's award season. Apparently, like, was this in the news? There are nominations. There are things happening. I woke up at 4 a.m. on Monday to go to the Beverly Hilton to see just what was going on with the Golden Globes. So a lot going on.
What was that like? I didn't even know they were doing something in person. Was it crowded? Was there pomp and circumstance?
It was not. It was definitely a lot more subdued than your typical place. Not as many camera crews out there. None of the entertainment magazines, except for Inside Edition, were there. No ET, no Access wow. Hollywood, none of the morning shows, none of the local affiliates, except I think KNBC was there, but KTLA, which generally does the most local entertainment coverage, was not. So that was really interesting to see everyone sort of decide they weren't going to show up, which baffled me a little bit because, sure, maybe it's a different year. Maybe you're not ready to cover the nominations like you did in the past, but it's also a news story. That's why I was there, is, okay, so what are they doing? How are they doing it? And why is Snoop Dogg here?
I'm so glad you brought him up. I mean,
that's the burning Snoop question.
Dogg, yeah, right? Was the surprise of the morning and just...
And the line of the morning, Mike, in your story where it was just like, he's a friend of the organization, but we don't know what that means. Because true, like, was he paid to be there? I mean, does he actually have friends that are in the organization? Like, what does that mean?
And why was HFPA so cagey about that, too? We all asked them, like, okay, so just tell us. I'm sure there's, like, a fun story behind Snoop Dogg. Like, maybe someone involved with the HFPA is buddies with him, or someone reps him. Or, like, there had to have been kind of a interesting backstory. But they're just like, no, he's a friend of the HFPA. And I'm like, what does that even mean?
And I am going to guess he's not an early riser in general. So the fact that they got him there so early in the morning to put on like a nice face and announce those awards and, you know, is it's a huge thing.
Yeah. Fair play to him. He deserves an award for being there at like 4 o'clock in the morning and saying all those names. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. They gave him a lot to do at 5 in the morning for poor Snoop Dogg. And you're right. He doesn't need to do this. Even if they paid him, he doesn't need the money.
Yeah, you don't need to do it. But what's the incentive?
Yeah.
The sausage. I saw your photos, Michael, of the sausage spread.
But there was no bacon. I heard there was turkey bacon and sausage. And I was like, no. That's not cool. Everyone's mad at you guys anyway, and then you want to make them more mad by not giving them real bacon. That was a choice, in my opinion.
Wow.
Yeah, it was bizarro TCA breakfast where actually they even had someone like serving the coffee. Like you couldn't get the coffee on your own. It was interesting, but it was subdued. I think interestingly enough, the nominations themselves were fine. I mean, there were no real embarrassing moments. They did what they should have done this year in most categories. So it's sort of, you know, more an issue of, okay, so what are the Globes next and what are they going to be doing? And we'll find out, I guess, in the coming days and weeks. My guess is it's going to be a kind of a banquet with HFPA members, mostly, announcing winners, not unlike what the TCA Awards do every year, untelevised, except TCA Awards does have talent show up. I don't think they're going to show up. And even Helen Hona, who's the president, said they're not expecting any celebrities or a red carpet this year.
What about ads? Have you seen anyone advertise yet that they're a Golden Globe nominee? It's only Tuesday when we're recording this, and I know the nominations have only been out for a day, but I'm really curious to see if people will like tout it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like when Mike said things, you know, they're a bit cagey about Snoop, like talk about social media reaction being cagey. Like everybody posted about the Critics' Choice nominations and how glad they were. And then some snubbed pretended they never even got a single Golden Globe nom. And then you get some like John Chu, who was just so happy to celebrate, you know, in the Heights that he posted it. So, but I don't think I've seen any ads. I'm trying to.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't seen any solo ads, but we did see yesterday social posts that effectively they could use the same art for an ad that said Critics' Choice and Golden Globes. So I almost wonder if for some studios and some talent, that's the way to do it. Like they acknowledge that they got both because they want to be considered for both actual trophies, but they're not going out of their way to campaign or to put extra money behind one. I don't know. I think that's what in the next few days would, to me, is what's interesting about this is everyone stayed so quiet during phase one. Now we see what they did. And as Mike said, like, it wasn't embarrassing. They nominated worthy people and worthy shows, worthy films, I think maybe more than some previous years. And so do people have a change of heart? Do they want to say, okay, we're going to support this now? I don't know.
There was no nomination this year that was like music, the Sia movie. You know how there's that usually one head scratcher? Like the nominations were fine. I was really happy to see Cyrano get a Best Picture nomination from the Globes in the musical category. So many musicals this year, you know, they should be recognized. I think the big winner, aside from Squid Game, which I'm sure you two will talk about, of the nominations between Critics' Choice Awards, Golden Globes, and Independent Spirit Awards is Troy Kotsur from Coda. Scored all three when I think all eyes early on in the season were on Marley Matlin to score a nomination. I sure hope she still does. But he is emerging as, you know, the standout from that movie, and I couldn't be more thrilled.
And he got a Spirit Award nomination this morning, too, which was, like you said, like it's just solidifying his place as the standout of this movie. Very excited for him.
Me too.
Were you happy for Ben Affleck getting the tender ball?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ben Affleck in the last 2 years has given three of the best performances I've seen and can't seem to make any headway with Oscar. So if it had been Tender Bar, if it had been The Last Duel, I would have been happy with either. But he is so good in the Tender Bar.
So is there any film that after the spate of nominations has really seen its stock rise? Is there something in particular that people are now kind of given a second look at?
I think Cyrano is starting to show that it could be a player. Got Peter Dinklage, got a Critics' Choice nomination as well. It's a late entry, so I love this movie, and when I've seen it with audiences, they love it, so I'm very curious to see how that plays. I think Coda, you know, there was some doubt earlier on, like, it came out so early, are people watching it? I think, like, that's starting to show it's got some legs. Nicolas Cage got a Critics' Choice Award nomination for Pig, made me so happy, did not get a Spirit Award nomination, kind of surprised me.
West Side Story obviously showed up a lot, and that was a late player. I mean, that and Nightmare Alley, which showed up, didn't show up in the Globes, but showed up a lot with Critics' Choice, and those were the last two films to screen. So that was
strong showing for Lost Daughter, too.
Yeah.
These last few days, yeah. which is thrilling. Happy to see Simon Rex in the Independent Spirit Awards race.
Danielle, from the TV side, some interesting choices. Going back to Critics' Choice, which was a couple weeks ago, Evil sort of making its way into the conversation from Paramount Plus and The Kings, of course. So that's sort of an interesting one that really hasn't been kind of on that awards radar until now.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because last time they did the Super Awards, I think I don't know if that's the full formal name, but it got a nomination for Best Horror Series. So I was like, well, at least we know they're watching that show. I didn't think that it would crack the Best Drama overall here because there are just so many others. So like that to me was probably the biggest surprise of that morning. Not just all the actors, also seeing nominations across the two King shows, Good Fight and Evil, but that Evil cracked into the drama series race. I was like, that's kind of really cool because it's knocking down some more genre barriers. It's proving that like sometimes these other voting bodies do some things that are very unique and worth watching.
It's such a good show, and I have always said that if it were on HBO or like Netflix, I feel like it would be sweeping the Emmys every year. But because it's on Paramount Plus and it's a genre show, it's not getting the respect it deserves, and I hope this is a start.
Well, isn't it interesting, though?
CBS.
Sorry, I was going to
say. No, CBS, yeah, you go. We're saying the same thing. You go. It's fine.
But yeah, what we're both about to say is, yeah, obviously moving from CBS to Paramount Plus, at least now it has that streamer patina, and that's already paying dividends.
Wow. So you think it's more, you think a move to Paramount Plus is actually like raises it in prestige?
Feels like it.
I think more people were able to actually watch it and like on their own time. I think even because when it was on CBS, it was always streaming after. But I think it was just a different audience, and I don't think that, you know, if you missed an episode, you didn't necessarily know to go watch it on Paramount Plus, where to find it, whatever. Now, especially because both King shows are there. And I think that if you're fans of those writers, like you're just following them there. And so you just know, like, this is where I go for that content. And I don't know. I mean, it worked for that group. I mean, certainly that group is, you know, they're critics. They do this for a living. I don't know that it'll translate the same way for Emmy is where these people are peers and it's harder for them to know where to find stuff because they're not just going to these streaming services for their jobs.
Wait, Janelle, have you just discovered The Good Fight? Sorry, Mike.
I am apparently the only person on the planet who didn't watch The Good Wife. I catch episodes here and there and liked it, but I never got hooked. I always heard about how great The Good Fight was, but it really wasn't until season one of Evil, and I got so hooked on that show that I really fully got into The Good Fight. And yes, I am ashamed. It's so good.
It's the Kings. They deliver.
Better late than never.
Stella. Yeah, exactly. Stella TV. I was so happy to see Christine Baranski get nominated yesterday.
That was insane for the Golden Globes because I was like, you know, that she's somebody who they've nominated before for Sybil, but they never acknowledged her in Good Wife. They didn't acknowledge her in Good Fight. And all of a sudden now it's a season five show and they're acknowledging her. And I was like, I'm glad, but I'm also like, where'd that come from?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I remember how long it took the Emmys to recognize Andre Brower for Homicide. And every year people were like, how are you overlooking this? And they finally shaped up and like, gosh, I don't know, maybe the third or fourth season. Mm.
Yeah, sometimes it takes a while. And sometimes because of the cycle and the scheduling, you have situations that Danielle and I have talked about, like somehow Succession has never been nominated by SAG. That obviously will be rectified this year. How could it not be? But the other like interesting thing, Danielle, I'd be curious your thoughts. Going to the Squid Game, since that's, you know, it is the moment. It is in the zeitgeist. It's being nominated by all these shows now. Do we think it's peaking now? And how's that going to impact its performance at the Emmys? Is it still going to be a player come Emmy time? Or will have people kind of OD'd on the squid?
Wait, what a way to put it. It's a good question. I think it'll still be a big player in nominations. I say that knowing there's also five more months of content coming, that a lot of which I don't even know what's coming in the drama category. So I'm kind of just basing it on what I do know is around it. There are a lot of the shows that were eligible for Winter Awards against it are not eligible at the next Emmy cycle because they already had their Emmy turn. So I think it's forward momentum from all of the nominations it is getting. And if it starts to win and actually make history by winning things, that'll continue to carry it into the Emmy discussion. And then I know Netflix is going to put a lot behind it at Emmy time too. Yeah. So I think there's no way it gets overlooked for a nomination. I just think that some of the acting categories are where I would keep my eye, because really Lee Jung Jae is the one that got the most nominations here and the most notice. That leaves a whole lot of people that maybe the Emmys want to celebrate for the first time and make their own kind of history.
Yeah.
I just think back to Anya Taylor-Joy sweeping mm-hmm. all the precursor awards. And then by the time the Emmys rolled around, Kate Winslet came in and won.
But Queen's Gambit still won limited series.
True.
So that's where it's like, I don't know. I think that her momentum helped the show overall.
Oh, definitely.
I think if Kate Winslet wasn't on that ballot with her, she would have won. But she's Kate Winslet, absolutely. And I think a lot of people were just like, we're not going to not give it to you for coming back to TV.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, though, Succession, especially with the, you know, that finale.
Mm-hmm.
Boy.
Oh, mercy.
So,
which, yeah, nobody had seen when they were casting these votes, so that may affect a lot going
forward.
Oh, you're
right. Oh, well, I'm still rooting for Matthew McFadden. He had a very good season.
He had a very good finale. So that'll be interesting on that side. I think comedy is going to be much more of a jump ball. So that's an interesting space. Loving the Only Murders in the Building recognition out there. But and Danielle, I'd be curious, like, do you have a favorite nomination from what we've seen so far from any of these shows, from Indie Spirits or Golden Globes or Critics' Choice?
I mean, I was really happy to see both Critics' Choice and the Golden Globes nominate Reservation Dogs. I wasn't sure that they both would. Globes was my big question mark. Did you actually see it? Do you know who these people are? Are you just trying to make a statement? They got the nomination. So even if they are just trying to make a statement, I'm glad they got the nomination, because that's again, I think, momentum towards the Emmys, and they deserve it. It's not just, you know, a diverse show. It's a very good show. but I would also say that I was really happy the Critics' Choice gave the other two a nomination as well.
Yes. 'Cause
I think that's like a sleeper in some ways, that a lot of people were not as aware of it in season one. And, you know, now it's building. And I think season two was a lot funnier than season one. I think they came into their own, but I also think that the move to HBO Max did not hurt, and all of this, you know, getting deeper with characters, seeing character growth, and taking them into different places. I'm hoping that that this is kind of the start for them as well, as just like a slow builder. You know, I'm trying to look forward and be like, well, this is a start of things to come.
Very happy about that nomination too.
Yeah, and maybe that also goes back to the streamer, the leg up, you know, moving to HBO Max. It's, you know, there's definitely, you know, people, even if these shows were streaming, like we were saying before, there is something about it being even more readily available on one of the main streaming services that gets people to tune in or pay attention, just because, who knows, the algorithm, like, sticks it in front of your face. In the way that it wouldn't have in the past. But I agree with Reservation Dogs. Exciting to see all the attention it's getting. Indie Spirits actually already rewarded it, the best ensemble cast in a new scripted series. So it's you know, definitely on its way to a lot more attention, and I think it's definitely going to be a contender come Emmy time as well. So Janelle and Jazz, fill us in on the calendar. What's coming up next film-wise that's opening soon that we should be keeping an eye on the coming weekend?
Wow. Jazz, is everything, I guess, is it Christmas Day Nightmare Alley opens?
Yes. Has Tragedy Macbeth opened, or I've just lost track of that?
No, it's so hard to keep track of some of it. Like Cyrano goes into limited release on the 17th.
That's
but
right,
I think
yes.
Only for a week, and I would urge you to see it in a theater. It's a gorgeous film. And then
do.
I think it gets pulled to get re-released again in January or February. So
that's right.
It's so hard to keep track. It just is.
Nightmare Alley then, definitely.
Yeah, I'm trying to find, actually, Tragedy of Macbeth, which, you know, I think I've said this several times. I'm not necessarily a fan of that play, and this is a fantastic adaptation. I'm not sure. When it's it looks like also Christmas Day.
There you go.
Yeah, so if you want to spend your Christmas Day with the Macbeth family or the Nightmare Alley family.
Also, I think The Lost Daughter opens
this week
before it gets before it drops on Netflix. So that stars Olivia Colman and Dakota Johnson and is directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal, who's getting a lot of love.
Deservedly so. And by the way, I did not know the writer of The Lost Daughter of the novel, Elena Ferrante, I did not know that's a pen name.
Wait, I didn't either.
Thank you!
She's
because I was
the,
at a Q&A.
The HBO show, My Brilliant Friend. We wrote about this, you guys. It's fine.
Yeah, I was doing a Q&A and Maggie Gyllenhaal said something about being a pen name, and I was like, did everyone know that? And everyone in the audience is like, yeah, you dummy.
It's okay. Well, we're too busy. Like, we don't, who has time to read?
Exactly.
I've read 155 books this year. So yeah, I've had time to read.
Yeah.
I know. I'm the only one that says stuff like that. I'm just giving you a hard time. I was serious when I said who has time to read. Like, there's too much TV. There are too many movies. I totally get it.
I might have to swap to audiobooks, right?
Yeah, that counts.
Well, I guess now that we're heading back to the office in 2022, there'll be time on the road to listen to audiobooks, but...
Oh, I have so many podcasts to catch up on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. I haven't listened to many now that I've been home.
Can I make one plug about all the award nominations coming out? There is an original musical this year with a ton of amazing songs by Sparks that is not breaking into any of the original song categories. And I know that for Annette, Amazon is pushing So Way Me Start, but there's also Sympathy for the Abyss. These songs are incredible, and it kind of boggles my mind that they're not getting any recognition.
I was baffled by that too, Janelle. I think, like, yeah, you and I love Annette, and the songs, that whole soundtrack is amazing. If you haven't seen it, spend time over the holidays watching it. It's a perfect family movie. No, I'm kidding. But seriously, I was happy to see Marion Cotillard get nominated.
Yes.
Genuinely happy to see her breakthrough. It was like, go HFPA. And if that's where it's going to break through, that had to be it. But yes, the songs should be breaking through. And I don't know why. So Music Branch, what's up?
Go back if you haven't yet and listen to Janelle's interview with the Sparks Brothers, which was fun. So that's in your, speaking of podcasts, in your podcast queue, check it out. We're giving them too much content. We're giving them too many episodes of Award Circuit, but it's out there for y'all to enjoy. But I think that covers it for this week. Go out, see some movies, and watch some TV and all that. And shout out to Danielle, who, we have, like, without her, there would have been no Emmy sections, the amount of work that she's put into these beautiful issues that we did and all of our Emmy coverage and the amount of stories and just like everything that you've done for Variety, Danielle. It's just an incredible body of work, and you're definitely going to be missed. So,
well, thank you.
Best of luck.
I'm
going to
miss you guys. I'm looking forward, honestly, to just like listening to this as a fan and reading whatever you guys put in those issues next year, because I know there will be the same amount, even though I will not be there to shepherd them.
Oh, and
so
I'm already.
I really look forward.
Set the bar.
The amount had nothing to do with me. So I look forward to seeing all of that come together. This is going to be, it's a journey. It's a big change, I think, for me. But again, I'm not dying, so we will stay in touch.
I get really melancholy because you and I share so many issues. And so I see the schedule and it always says Riley/Giorgiano. Yeah. And I'm like,
now it might just be you, Janelle. It might be you doing
Believe
all the pages.
Me, I've had panic attacks about that as well.
No, it should not be you, just you. They should definitely be finding a new me at some point.
There is no new you.
But for exactly. now, it's just you. Good luck. It might be good, though, because honestly, I had so many very specific requests on the TV side. And now you can just be like, none of that matters. I'm going to do whatever I want.
I do what I want.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
All right, everyone take their vitamins, be healthy, be safe. And for Jazz and Janelle, we'll see you next week. And thanks, Danielle. After the break, Spencer director Pablo Larraín from Los Angeles. This is Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. And we're back. It's the Award Circuit Podcast. I'm Michael Schneider. Spencer stars Kristen Stewart as Princess Diana, who grapples with her decision to end her marriage to Prince Charles, played by Jack Farthing. The film isn't entirely true to fact, but instead is an imagining of what might have happened during that fateful holiday period in 1991.
Yesterday, you arrived after the Queen.
I got lost.
Oh, how could you get lost? You've lived over the hill for years.
It looks different now. Everything looks different.
You sure you went late yesterday because you were delayed by someone?
Why would you think I got delayed by someone?
Oh, come on, come on. They are circling us. Didn't you know? Don't you read?
It seems they're circling just me. Not you. Just me.
The thing is, Diana, there has to be two of you. You know, there's two of me, there's two of Father, two of everyone. There's the real one and the one they take pictures of.
Variety's Clayton Davis spoke with director Pablo Larraín about Spencer, and they began by discussing how he feels about finally having the film out on screens.
Well, it's a good feeling. It's somehow the end of a very long process. And you know, we worked really hard to deliver a movie that we like, and we hope others will like it too. And there's an interesting amount of attention on the film. And that's good. I hope that would make more people get to see it. But again, Clayton, it's just really fascinating to complete the process. A movie would never be done until it you know, the audience can actually see it. And we really love the process. And I also speak for myself. I enjoyed this movie so much. I would do it again. it won't make any sense because it already exists. But I had a really, really good time making it.
Does that mean we're getting a Spencer sequel? We're going to get Spencer 2 after she drives away?
No. Why would you repeat it? I don't think so. I'd love to work with Kristen, you know, or anything else. But that was my personal stab on the subject. Just be careful with it. Just do it once as good as possible, and then do something else. That's my rule.
Yeah. Oh no, it's great. Actually, let's talk about you and Kristen. Not a pairing I would have put together in my head of director and star, like just something that never crossed my mind that you two would do something together. And it was a perfect marriage in that sense of a filmmaker's vision and an actor's interpretation. So did you always have her in mind for that role, or did you have any other actors in mind? How'd you land with her?
Well, no, I'm of course a fan of her work, particularly in a couple of movies that she did with Olivia Sayas. Mm-hmm. And I always felt that she had a very interesting enigma, you know, and sort of a mystery. And it's someone that is very hard to describe, at least for sure on screen, which is what matters in this case. And I'm not talking about her public persona. I'm thinking on what she can do in front of a camera. And Spencer, it's a movie that proposes a very specific sort of cinematic device, which is to inhabit her perspective and her point of view. So what it was important for the film was to have someone that would let us, you know, inhabit her POV, but at the same time wouldn't let you completely understand what she's going through. And that is a very interesting balance, because you don't really get to understand exactly what she's feeling. Mm-hmm. And that remains as a mystery, and that creates an interesting interaction. I will say that I never thought that Kristen was going to get the character and all the, you know, the mannerism, the physicality and the voice. Well, she had an incredible help from a coach named William Conacher, who helped us a lot. But so quickly, I knew for sure she was going to get there. I just didn't know how long it was going to take her to be in the shoes, in the proper sort of time and the more internal space. But she got it really quickly, and she was very fearless all the time. And from the very first time I talked to her on the phone, we had this really weird and funny conversation the first time I called her. And he was a great partner for the process. And we were very close during the making on the movie, and it was so gratifying. And I don't know, every day was a very special day. And in my case, I would tell that usually when you make a movie, you know how long is going to be the shooting, right? So you prepare yourself for that. It's like a marathon, and you know that it's going to be an certain amount of kilometers. And so you're usually very exhausted by the end. And this is the first time that it happens to me that when we finished it, I would have keep going for another 2 months if I could have. You know?
Really?
Yeah. I felt super energetic and I don't know, it was just the joy of making it with Claire Mathon and obviously the rest of the cast and everyone's process, that everyone brought different things and created, you know, a movie that is full of love, of panic, of mental distress, and there's some psychological terror sometimes, and there's a healing process near the end as well. So it's a particular movie that you know, I'm very proud of it.
This is your 11th feature film that you've directed. Is this the biggest budget you've had for a movie yet? Because I mean, it looks like a gajillion dollars, but I know that filmmakers do amazing things.
I've done two television works and then 9 movies. So that's maybe what you think is 11.
Oh, okay.
It's the 9th movie. And as a movie, probably, yes, it's the highest budget that I've worked with, which is like, you know, I'm blessed. It's wonderful. I think it's, a good luxury to be able to work with this type of sources and with the people involved. But believe me that movies are made in the same way, ultimately, it, with less or more budget or money involved. There's at the end of the line, there's something that happened that's so intimately connected with the crafting of cinema that is usually the same in any language, in any country. And these movies are made in the same way all over. The difference probably is that we got to work with incredible artists, and we got to control what we see and what we hear. And that is something that it is different, but that is one of the things that happen when you work with more resources, that you are able to have more control of everything.
So, I mean, I'm sure that that's a little bit of the stress off your shoulder, just having that those few extra dollars to be able to like build a set or shoot for an extra day if you need to. How many days did you shoot the entire?
Not a lot. We shot for
37 days.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's an interesting paradox. Sometimes the more expensive the production is, the less time you have to film it, because everything is so expensive, so you don't have a lot of time. So you need to find a balance in between what you have and the time that you have to film that, right? But it was enough. It was enough for what we needed. We worked a lot, and we had to travel a lot. And maybe COVID made it help like slower.
Yeah. Probably.
But at the same time, you know, what's weird is that thanks to COVID, we were able to access certain places that in regular circumstances we have never been able to be there for so long. Yeah. Like certain places that there's a hotel in Germany called Kronberg that we were able to turn into a part of the house of Sandringham. And then the exterior, which is another castle that we were able to make it our main location. Those places, it in regular times, you just don't, it's not about the money either. It's just that you just don't have access to lock that place down for a month or two because they're public spaces or a private place that has another use. So it allowed us to have that. But we had a great script, you know, and that is a good start. It's a good start. It's a good guide. And then besides Kristen, I was able to invite actors that I admire and respect, like Tim Spall and Sally Hawkins and Sean Harris and Stella Gonet and Jack Farthing and those, we found those incredible kids. And so it was a good thing and a good reminder that one of the good tricks on cinema for filmmakers is to invite people you admire and that people that can do things that way better than that you know how to do or you think you know how to do, but they're specialists and incredible professionals like Guy Diaz or Jacqueline Duran or even, you know, Johnny Greenwood or Wakana and Stacey in the makeup. It's just incredible people that that, you know, decided to collaborate. It's a luxury.
I'm sure you've gotten this question a million times, but I have to ask you, was there any conversation with any of the royal family prior, or have you gotten any word of the reaction about the movie from them since it screened?
Not at all. Not at all. And when they say that the royal family is very discreet, you better believe it.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing.
Did you ask to speak with them at all, like beforehand?
No. I think that you know, the royal family is a good context for the film, but we were, you know, doing a movie about Diana and about her identity as a you know, her process as a human, as a mother. I think we were careful in not to make fun of them or to make them look ridiculous or mean or whatever. I think what we want to do is to portray people that is trapped in the wheels of history and tradition, and it's a problem that they all have inside of that institution, that structure, and we focus on one person that is there, that is Diana, that is the person that decides to leave that organization and walks out, and I just look and I if I care about anyone or anything in this story. It's probably about the both sons, William and Harry, who's people that, you know, I'm sure they have been go through a painful process because of the loss of their mom. So if there's something that I would like to do is to avoid any, to throw more, you know, more pain to sure. their story. Mm. So we did it with a lot of respect and admiration towards her. But at the same time, look, we make movies, you know. when you sit down in the theater, people would go to see it. Hopefully would read that it's a fable. That's what we have at the beginning, which is what we do. Once we are inside, no one would ever know what actually happened. And that's where the fiction comes in. And that is what I think we do.
Awesome. Thank you. So we've done Jackie Kennedy. We've done Diana. Historic women seems to be your thing right now. Is there anyone on your mind that you would want to tackle next? I mean, even whether you have the funds or not, but is there any figures out there that you would love to depict?
Well, I've been thinking about it. The thing is that I just don't think it's a good idea to talk about it before you actually do it. I'm the type of cook that prefers to cook first, then offer.
And let me try the food.
let me see what we're doing and then offer it. And then also, because I think that it's healthy for this type of works to keep it in an internal process, because if I would tell you something, I would probably be very responsible because I wouldn't really know what I'm chasing, you know.
Okay. So,
you know, I think it's good to be in that process, but just one thing, it's whatever it is, it's on the 20th century.
Okay. Well, yeah, I was gonna ask for him. So it's in the 20th century. Is it someone? Can you share if it's like an American or if someone more international?
No, I'm saying I don't know.
You don't know.
No, I'm thinking of reading, but it's let's see. It's obviously a good opportunity to do a third one. Yeah. And a last one.
It'll be a last one. So this would be a trilogy. This would be done.
Yeah. I don't want to spend all my life doing movies. I love them, but I think it's good to put an end to it. But let's see. It's been also difficult days to focus on anything else because we're here very present in this process of you know, promoting and releasing the movie. And we really want people to see it and experience the film on a theater. They're weird times for cinema nowadays.
Yeah.
So it's quite challenging. And I've heard these discussions that, you know, that they say that some filmmakers are asking the people to really see their movies in the theater because it was made for the theater and all that. And I'm like, yeah, obviously. Obviously, you when you make a movie, you're filming for the big screen, for a collective experience that it's projected on a big screen. It's like do you think that a musician would prefer that you listen to their work live or with big proper speakers than, I don't know, and the speaker that's coming out of a phone? I don't think so. You know, it's really, there's things related to the type of experience and we all film for the big screen and that's what this movie is going to be. And, you know, come on.
Yes. So we've spoken about this before also, but the internet is the internet. Social media wants what they want. They really want that third one to be a Britney Spears one. So I just wanted to ask you, does she interest you as a potential figure in the future? If you were to
I have read it too. I thought it was very funny. I am very curious, particularly with her relationship with media. Mm. But it's not, I don't think it's something that I will actually do. I think that, you know, let me put it this way. I've worked with certain people's life and pieces of their life, and it's never really a biopic. I think that the biopic concept is a little bit of a fantasy, because I don't really think you can put someone's life on the screen. So if you like, what it would be very odd is to make a movie, let's say, about someone like Britney Spears, but who's gonna play Britney Spears? Like her? Or someone else would be playing, and would she be on the set looking at herself and looking at another person? That operation, I think, is really weird. Maybe doing a documentary or something, or like a fake documentary, a fictional take on her could be very interesting. I don't know if I am the right person to do that.
Yeah.
But my crafting is really on something else, that something that could allow the tools of fiction to enter and to create something that is less describable and further out from the biopic world. And yeah, but I think for sure that she's a very interesting person, and I'm happy that she's free, by the way.
Yeah, good, awesome. What you were describing, by the way, with biopics, I call it the slice of life method is always the best method for biopics, which is why I think you have excelled so much in this area, because you don't do the cradle to grave thing that we see a lot.
But it's not possible. It would never work.
Yeah. Yeah. It's rough.
I mean, do you think you've seen any movies in your life that actually you've seen the movie and it's like, okay, that's what who that person was?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's always a fictionalized kind of something made for the movies. You're not getting the full.
No, but you think you have seen a movie?
Oh, I have. Oh, I don't think I have. No.
So there you go. I had the same feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very tricky genre that is out. By the way, what do you call, so I've said this to you before, I feel like you've carved out your own niche. I call it, now we're gonna call it the trilogy, but I've been calling it like the horror biopic genre, and not saying like a horror film, but it's like horrors of life captured. Do you have your own name for it, of like what you're calling this process with Jackie and Spencer?
Let me tell you something that I deeply believe in, is if you focus on someone really close and you follow that person, let's say, Clayton, just for the sake of the exercise, that I follow you with a camera for 2 months and you are at some point ignoring my existence near you, and I'm able to enter to your intimacy and your privacy, you know, you could look in the eyes of others as someone that it's really weird, because when we observe someone so intensively and we get to inhabit that point of view, maybe that could be considered as something that has horror elements. And if on top of that, you put, music that's coming from the hands of Johnny Greenwood,
yeah,
or Mika Levy, for what it's worth, then you could think about that. I don't think that, I understand what you're saying, and of course we need to put thinking boxes to ever to communicate and to describe them. I understand, I respect that, but there is obviously elements of horror and panic, but they come from the most inner sort of ideas of human perception. When you work with someone that is, especially in the case of Diana, that struggled with things related to mental health, as she described it actually when she was alive, and then obviously that turned into an eating disorder, and she maybe has visions of things that are in front of her that could sort of alter the reality that she's observing, maybe that could be turned into something that we could consider in that it's in the space of horror. I'm okay with that. I'm fine, I wouldn't know how to do it differently, you know. And I'm just trying to be honest with the way that I approach the work that I do. And but yeah, I insist. It's like everyone, any of us could have that perception if we're to put a narrative through your own perception. I think horror or panic are a day-by-day thing that we all experience in little moments. It just depends how you see them. It's all about how you take them.
I love you, Pablo Lorraine, but I'm just letting you know right now, I can't be your trilogy. You can't end with my story. It's going to be a really weird
time. You're alive. You're alive. I couldn't, unless you want to play yourself. That's
it would not be good. I have my last big question for you, and this is one I'm very proud to see kind of happening. And it shows progress. You know, you're a Chilean filmmaker representing Latinos in this space, which are so underrepresented in Hollywood. You're one of many that are going to be in the Oscar race this year for Best Director. It's you, Guillermo del Toro, Reynaldo Marcus Green, Lin-Manuel Miranda, four like in major films this year. The last time we've had anything close to that was 2006. Guillermo was nominated that year for Pan's Labyrinth, and we had Iñárritu and Alfonso Cuarón. Do you see a nice shift happening for representation, both not just in front of the camera in films, but behind the camera with filmmakers like yourself? Do you feel hopeful for that future?
I'm mixed. I think there's still a lot to be made. I think that I'm personally coming from a privileged education and a privileged context and circumstances. So I think that there's a lot to be made in two sides. One is that we need to probably improve our equality in Latin America. That in my country is something that we're struggling right now, and I hope it just would get better with the election that is happening in a couple of weeks. And that's something that we need to improve. And then in terms of the Hollywood perspective and the world of cinema, I do think that there's a lot more to be made. And I think there are incredible voices coming from our region and our culture. We have a lot to say. And I just hope that the opportunities are even. You know, that's what it is. That's what you want. You want some evenness in the process. And there's a lot of incredible talent that has come from Mexico lately, people that you've mentioned. Some of them are also coming from the United States, people that you had mentioned too, like Latins, that they're actually Americans. But I do believe that there's very interesting voices as well in the other sides of Latin America, which is in the South, which is where I come from. We have a very interesting and strong perception of fiction and even in documentaries as well, I believe. I think that the more we have the chance to be heard, the better. I don't know exactly how to fix it, to be honest. I wish I could help. But if there's something that I could say is that if it's possible, yes, it's possible. Can you make a movie that creates attention on the world coming from anywhere, or in our case from Latin America? Yes, it's possible. We just need the right amount of opportunities, and that's something relevant. And I hope it just gets better. And we just need to be heard, you know. And that's a mix of things that we can improve in order to have a better voice. But also, again, it's just opportunities. How do we make them even? How do we have the same opportunities for everyone?
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Thank you. And I just have to add, like, you're such a great example of what I'm talking about. I can't speak for everyone, but what I'm talking about when I'm talking about representation, you know, like Spencer is the story of a white woman, but so through the eyes of a Latino. Like that's representation, being able to tell any story you want. It doesn't have to just be Latino stories, you know, and while you do those very well, and please do more of them, you know, it's about telling, you know, the stories that you feel passionate about. From that perspective. Of course.
And look, this movie was mainly shot in Germany with an American actress, shot by a French DP, with English actors, and then English, you know, composer and production design and custom. And our head of makeup is Japanese, you know. So, look, it's a little bit of Babylonia, you know, Babylon situation, where everyone is just going, because I guess Diana was a very universal person that we cannot relate to, and that is in the heart of the movie. But yeah, so I speak as a citizen of the world that had the chance to do this. And maybe, you know, my ghosts, where I'm coming from, are part of the ghosts that are in the film. But it's hard to know, and we would never know, because a movie like this would never be made again. and that is just strange, but it's particular, but it's what it is.
That's director Pablo Larraín, the filmmaker behind Spencer, which was released wide in November. And that's it for this edition of Variety's Awards Circuit Podcast. Drew Griffith edited this episode, and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Awards Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head to Variety.com and click on the Awards Circuit tab to find the latest Oscar predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tanke, Clayton Davis, and Janelle Riley, I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you on the circuit.